This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 13, Episode 9.
This is Writing Excuses, quick characterization.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary.
I'm Dan.
I'm Howard.
And we are talking all this month about side characters, and it's a topic we've touched on before in Writing Excuses, so I want to dig into something specific about side characters this week. I want to talk about how we characterize people quickly, because sometimes you just don't have a lot of space to dedicate to these side characters. So let's say you only have a couple sentences to characterize someone. Dan, how do you go about doing it?
The kind of the cheap and dirty hack that I use is just to give them something that is, in my opinion, unexpected. If based on what their role is or what their situation is, you know, in the story, I will throw something else weird on top of that so that you'll remember, oh, yeah, this is that kid. But also,
right,
he really likes this one strange thing.
You put them in conflict with the reader's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good way to make someone memorable.
Yeah, one of the things that I try to do actually is that thing, except not just the reader's expectations, but the point of view character's expectations. Because using that allows me to kind of slide past some of the, I am telling you what this character looks like. It also allows me to then convey information about my main character, which when I'm writing short fiction, I have to be able to get every sentence to do double duty. One of the sneaky tricks that I will use sometimes is I will use some of the tools that people use to remember names in real life, which is if the character says their name, I will slide a detail in that is alliterative without...
Wow.
Without calling attention to it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Monty with the mustache.
Manipulated now.
So like an example?
Monty with the mustache.
Monty with a mustache. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean.
Howard, you know, with the hairless.
Hairless Howard. I do, you know, and there are other memory palace kinds of things that you can do with that too. So
right. Make the guy named Jim a butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that mm-hmm. would totally work. So, I'm terrible with remembering names, and that's when I'm meeting someone in real life. So, I was taking a class on how to remember names, and it doesn't help me actually that much. It's a little better, but I suddenly realized that these were all very useful tools for cementing a name with a reader. So, if I have a character who is a jeweler, then I will, one of the details that I'll call attention to is, you know, the earrings that are hanging from her pendulous earlobes.
Right.
And I have named her Patricia, or, you know, and
Pendularia.
Yeah. Penny. So that is a very sneaky, I do not deploy that all the time, but that is a trick that, works distressingly well.
You know, I think I got better with side characters once, and this is kind of coming back to the name thing, once I realized that I wasn't good with names and I wanted to be, and so I started practicing anytime I was in public. I learned the names of all the people working the line at the place where I got salads. And in the course of doing that, they always gave me the best strawberries because I was the guy who came in and knew everybody's names. But in the course of learning their names, they're all wearing identical clothing. They're all working this salad line. But in the course of learning their names, I forced myself to remember some of these details. I taught my brain that this is important. And so I started retaining that information. It's fascinating that the two seem to be related. And if I will often see in movies when I can't tell two side characters apart, I know they've done it wrong
mm-hmm.
because I'm pretty good at tracking those things. And if I can't tell, then it's not been done right.
So, well, yeah, go ahead.
That's the one counterexample being something like Crabbe and Goyle from Harry Potter, who are supposed to be interchangeably faceless.
Yeah.
How do you characterize people without viewpoints? And let me explain this. I find it as a writer really easy, if I give myself a brief viewpoint through someone's eyes, to dig into their backstory, to kind of discover, right, who they are, right? And just suddenly they come to life. And if I don't have a viewpoint, then I have a lot of trouble with that. It's like,
you know, I will go ahead sometimes, even when I'm doing short fiction, I will go ahead and do a little bit of an exploratory scenelet thing from the other character's point of view, usually the same scene that I'm writing, especially if I've got a character that is being very flat, which still happens sometimes. It's just you're not getting traction on them. And so I'll do exactly that. I'll write that scene from their point of view, which helps me figure out what their motivations are and some of the physical, the body language that they're going to be using. And then I'll flip back to my main character, do the scene again, and incorporating the information that I've learned, which will often, I don't do that every time, but it's a very useful exercise to engage in sometimes.
I've seen you do something similar.
Yeah, so the thing that I do all the time, and this is such a dumb little thing, I will play two truths and a lie with my characters because then I get to know things about them and I get to know what kind of things they would lie about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. I've done it with, I think at this point, all of my young adult series. The one I'm writing right now, I actually put a scene into the book because I find it so interesting. But just to watch them tell truths and tell lies, you know, inevitably I'll have one character that tries to cheat. You know, and it just tells me a lot about who they are very quickly.
I want to point something out that you said about what are the things that they would lie about and why would they lie about them. I think that when we have characters who wind up dropping into being just a single quirk, then I think one of the reasons that that happens is because we've thought, oh, I'm going to do that quirk. I'm going to give him this quirky thing that the Flanderization.
Right. We'll talk mm-hmm. about Flanderization in a minute. Yeah. We can just dig into it right now. Why don't you tell us what Flanderization is?
So Flanderization is referring to the slow evolution of a character into just being a quirk. And it relates to the what happened to the character Flanders on The Simpsons, that he started out as being this very rounded character and then eventually became a single joke.
Because when people saw him come on the screen, they all wanted him to do his thing.
Yeah.
So he did his thing, and the writers all just had him do his thing. And then he stopped being a person and started being a quirk.
Right. So I think one of the things that you can do to keep that from happening is figure out why your character does that thing, and then only deploy it when the triggers happen. If you want them to do it, then you have to give them the trigger, and the trigger then has to be coherent to the rest of the story. And it also makes the character more rounded because you know, whatever reason they have to do that thing, that same reason is going to motivate a lot of other different choices.
And next month, we're going to dig into this kind of idea really deeply. We'll do an entire podcast on the idea of characters who are self-contradictory or characters who wear different hats in different social situations and act differently in those social situations.
Spoiler alert, everyone does.
Yeah, we'll dig into this a lot.
Hey, writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Let's go ahead and stop for our book of the week, and you're actually going to tell us about Brimstone.
Yes, Brimstone by Sherry Priest is fantastic. It is a story set right after the First World War, and there are two main characters. One of them is a young woman who is a medium, and she has traveled to this new small town to learn how to use her powers. And it's a real town that really had a spiritualist movement in it, and still does. And then the other character is a man who survived the war and has come back with a ghost. But he doesn't realize he has a ghost. Things just keep catching on fire. And it's their interaction and figuring out what it is that is haunting him and has come back with him from the war. And the characterization in this is so rich. It's a huge cast because she's in this small town filled with spiritualists that she's meeting. And it's this very huge community. Each character feels distinct and individual, even the ones that are on stage just for a few moments. And even the ones who actually never come on stage because they're dead already. it's wonderful storytelling. It's
Brimstone
by Sherry Priest.
And if you've never read Sherry Priest, she's one of the few writers who can hook me from the very first sentence of a book. The writing itself, the language is incredible.
Yeah, and it's written in an epistolary form so that each character is, what you're reading are their journals. Yeah.
So one of the things I've learned over the years for characterizing side characters in specific or doing things quickly is what I call peekaboo moments. And it's a measure of great gratification to me as a writer when occasionally someone will come up and say, oh, this little side character just came to life for me. And almost always it's somebody I've done one of these peekaboo moments where, you know, you are writing a story and in general you'll describe the scene and then focus in on the main characters and have the conversation or the conflict or things like this. And everything else fades to background, even some of the side characters who are coming in and interacting with them. And what I like to do is occasionally say, no, we're gonna add a splash of color to this specific scene, to this specific person. We're going to fade them from the black and white background into the characters paying attention to them saying, oh, this person wasn't what I thought they were. This guard who's standing guard at the door isn't the person I thought they were. They're, you know, between while they're waiting, they're standing there juggling or something like this. And what I try to do in these peekaboo moments is show a moment of humanity and backstory and passion from somebody who's not related to the main story at all, just so that you get a glimpse that, hey, all these people populating this world have their own motivations and their own passions. And I find that the occasional use of one of these can really add a lot of vividness to your story, or using them with a character who's often in the scene but is never the main character the reader will take that character and take that image of them and bring it to the next scenes where they're there. And they're like, oh yeah, this is the person who has twin daughters and, you know, is always on the lookout mm-hmm. for two copies of things because they like to give it to their twin daughters. I don't know, something like that that gives humanity to the background characters.
Yeah, there's one of my favorite movies is Brick by Rian Johnson, which is basically a film noir but set in a modern high school. And as much as I love it, I could not tell you who any of the side characters are except for one drug dealer who pauses somewhere around the second act break and gives a little monologue about how much he likes the Lord of the Rings books. Hmm. And he's such a beautiful character because of that moment. It's amazing how much richness that adds.
You know, one of the tricks that I use is having the characters justifiably talk about each other. The 18th, good Lord, Schlock Mercenary book, one of the opening scenes, the company's about to take a job, and our protagonist is talking to her sister, and her sister saying, you know, I need medical help. She's like, I'm not a doctor. Why are you calling me? Well, you work for a mercenary company. You got battlefield medics, don't you? Well, yeah, our doctor, I guess she's okay, but our battlefield medic is like a walking cutlery station. And then we have the battlefield medic show up behind her and say, saved your life. And Schlock says, she also hears really well. And now we have, in two panels, insight into five characters. And, okay, it helps that I'm able to illustrate them, so some of this context is
here. Luxury!
Yeah. But And I did it specifically, and this is, you know, I've got a spreadsheet for this. I did it because I knew these characters are all going to be critical to this story, and I need to introduce the reader to them early in a way that is memorable.
But doesn't take a lot of panels.
But doesn't take a lot of panels. And yeah, it took two panels. And while this is happening, we are moving the story forward by establishing why this job is going to make sense for the company to take.
You know, there are some books out there, and I was going to give the kind of warning that you can't do this too much in most books.
Yeah.
If every scene you're spending a paragraph on five different side characters, then mm-hmm. suddenly you're the point of quickly characterization. Yeah. But there are some books that this is kind of the way the book is. We've mm-hmm. recommended The Genie on the podcast before, and I read that because you guys recommended it. And it is a story mostly about the side characters.
Yeah.
And on this page, you will spend three pages on this side character. On this one, and they just kind of are there populating the story and constantly interacting with the main characters. But the main characters are almost there as an excuse to explore an entire community.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And I think one of the reasons it works in that book is because everything is new to the main characters. And so that's one of the reasons that it works is because of the POV focus on who is this interesting person that I have encountered that is unlike anything that I have ever seen living in a glass bottle for 1,000 years. So this is, there are many other books that do that where I think it does not work. It's not compelling and engaging.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Can I offer one other trick? Think about one of the things that I will do sometimes is think about where the character was or what they were doing before the protagonist walked on stage. Because I think one of the things that will make a character seem flat is when they have just been waiting for the main character to appear. So, you know, it's you don't even have to give the character a name or anything like that. But if my main character walks in and the clerk behind the counter wiped mustard off her mouth and then smiled brightly, can I help you? That character already feels more real and compelling than just...
That's a really good tip. I think we're out of time. Howard, though, you've got a cool thing that cartoonists use.
Oh, yeah, the silhouette test. Cartoonists, comic book writers, anybody who's working in sequential art where there are characters...
And puppeteers.
If you're going to keep these characters straight, they have to be able to pass the silhouette test, which is where all of the details of the characters are removed. All you can see is the outline, or all you can see is, you know, the filled outline, just the silhouette. And if you can't tell them apart, something has to change. I ask myself this all the time. What is the prose equivalent for the silhouette test? And what I've kind of boiled it down to is the adverbs and adjectives that I will so rarely let myself use when I'm describing characters, which are the ones that I would only use on character A and would never use on character B, and just make a quick list of those adjectives and adverbs. And once I have those, when I am writing the characters, those adjectives and adverbs need to disappear. Because, you know, you expand them out into other things.
Right. Yeah. Come up with those. Yeah. You don't necessarily want to always describe somebody who comes on scene as greasy. But if on one scene, they're the person who's always eating a big hamburger and dropping bits of it to their jeans, then that image you can use repeatedly.
So the homework, take your cast of characters and make their adjective adverb list so that in terms of those words, they are passing the silhouette test for you.
That's great. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.